Greetings and salutations. Welcome back to Sacred Symbols Plus, a PlayStation podcast supplement. Not numbering this episode because I'm not sure when it's going to go live. It'll go live a week or so after we record it. My name is Colin Moriarty. I'm joined today by a very special guest. He's the founder and editor-in-chief of Seasoned Gaming and someone that I had just a brief interaction with on Twitter, and we decided to do a podcast together. I'm going to save that for a moment. His name is Ainsley Ains Bowden. Ains, thanks for joining me today. How are you?
I'm doing very well, Colin. Yeah, thanks for the invite. And yeah, looking forward to the conversation, man.
Should be good. Yeah, me too. I like to find people that disagree with me, like heat-seeking missile, specifically because, not any just random people, but people in the industry, because I am trying to have more conversations that are difficult, and no one really ever wants to have them, but... You and I had interacted. Actually, I went back and looked, and it wasn't even really a bad interaction. I just invited you on the show. But originally, it was to talk about some clip that was going on that from Sacred Symbols or whatever about Xbox. And so we had that on the calendar because Micah set that up. But then I messaged you because I had to actually reschedule with you because I had an impromptu doctor's appointment that I needed to take, and you kindly didn't have a problem with that. But when I emailed you, I was like, we should just do something else. And so... my idea is, knowing your gaming bona fides, and I want to hear about your website and your history in the industry and all of that, I felt like, you know, with the Konami news going on recently, Chris and Dustin, my co-hosts, are not really old school like I am. So I was like, you know what, this guy might be a great, you know, he calls himself the Seasoned Gaming or whatever. I'm like, he might be good for this Konami conversation. So anyway, that's a long-winded way to say how we got together today. So you're very welcome here, and tell the audience who you are, where you come from, all the rest. I know you literally come from Missouri, but or live there, but right? Kansas City?
Yes. Kansas City, yes.
I have that written in my notes here. And then, but tell them who you are and where they can find you and all that, and why you're here today.
Yeah, appreciate it. So funny you picked up on Seasoned Gaming, because some people, seriously, Colin, ask me what that even means. And the whole goal, obviously, is that I've been gaming a very long time.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm in my 40s, right? Grew up in the ColecoVision and Atari 2600 era and have lived and loved gaming ever since. So, yeah, I've been gaming for that long. I started with those systems, got into the 8-bit era, 16-bit era, and I've owned, collected, traded, and sold. I actually ran a business selling games many years ago. More games and consoles than, you know, most people ever have, thousands and thousands. And so about 5 years ago or so, I founded Seasoned Gaming, and I have a career, obviously, outside of gaming, in the kind of tech industry and architecture and infrastructure type work. So I have a good knowledge of kind of the tech side of things in gaming. But what I wanted to do is really just kind of start a site that was really just passionate about gaming. No platform arguments, none of this nonsense, just games. And so that's where it came from and originated. And to do that, I founded the site, created it, run it still today, nearly 5-6 years later now, all sans monetization, excuse me. So there's no ads. There's no ads on our YouTube videos. Basically, the site costs me money to run. But I do that just because I love gaming so much, the passion for it. So the people that write for our site do it purely, again, out of passion, do it on topics they love. And I just feel that generates a better conversation where it's less about this kind of clickbaity, argumental type stuff and really just focused on games they love, platforms they love, whatever it may be. You know, completely free to write what you want, but it's purely out of passion. So that's what we do. And that's what we've been doing for a few years now, seen some really good growth, met a lot of cool people. And I mean, here's another example, right? I wouldn't have gotten to be on your show or even interacted with you if I hadn't kind of reached out and started this years ago. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. You're very welcome. I'm looking at your site now, and I was looking at it last night. It reminds me a lot, and this is a total compliment, it reminds me of Video Games Chronicle, which is what I feel like is the premier video game website right now, by Andy Robinson, old school games writer, just because it reminds me of almost the 90s coverage, like, and the early 2000s coverage where I came from at IGN when I started there at 2002, where it's a little, you know, it's got opinion and it's got, obviously, it's a lot of subjective stuff with video game reviews and whatnot, but it just feels a little, it's not like incendiary. And I like that. So I actually think you're perfect for this particular episode we're going to do about Konami. And if I have one piece of advice for you, it's your audience wants you to make money. So I would monetize your site and I'd monetize your YouTube video. Seriously, because when I started Last Stand, I did the same thing where we just had Patreon, but I demonetized everything else. And everyone's like, why? You know, like I can't afford to be on Patreon. I'd want you to make money off my ad clicks and stuff. And I'm like, okay, cool. So just a thought, maybe you can at least cover your server costs, but I bet you'd make more. All right. So let's get into this real quick. We don't have to get real quick, actually. It can be as long as you want. But what I instructed Ains to do and what I did was I constructed a list of just five Konami IP, and he did the same. And the reason why we did this, for people that are unfamiliar, although if you listen to Sacred, you know what's going on, especially because I'm so into old Konami games, is Konami recently held a contest, or is holding a contest in Japan, where they're opening up their IP, much of their IP, not all of it, but much of their IP to independent developers that can pitch their, you know, a Gradius game or a Twin B game or whatever they want, you know, Mr. Go, you know, Goemon or whatever, like whatever you want. And there are certain IP, big IP, like Metal Gear's not in there, Castlevania's not in there, whatever. But what I went to Ains with was, I said, let's have a list of each of our IP and just who we might think would be appropriate in a dream scenario. So unfortunately, I own a developer, right, Lilimo, and we actually were talking about wanting to do something here for one of the games, and we found out it was Japan only, so we can't do it. So it really is just a... this is just a hypothetical fun exercise the audience often likes doing. And I really want to hear about how you've married specific Konami IP with developers and what you might see for the future, Ains, with these particular games. And so as to not step on your toes, because I don't know what you chose, you don't know what I chose, I'm going to let you lead. You're the guest. And if you choose something I chose, then I'll follow up with what you said with some of my thoughts. But otherwise, we can just bounce back and forth that way. And and have up to 10 IP, although I think there's going to be crossover here.
Yeah.
So kick it off however you want with whatever IP you think you want to talk about and who you think might be responsible for its revitalization and why you think it might live again and what it might be and look like.
Okay. Yeah. So I definitely think there's going to be some crossover. I mean, obviously they have some kind of what I consider legendary IPs, right?
Definitely.
And I think many people like us who grew up with these games or have been frustrated that, you know, we haven't seen these kind of come to their potential, especially with the growth we've seen in the games industry. It's like, why have we not seen these IPs, you know, be celebrated? So I think I'll start with probably the most obvious one for me. And I know this goes for many people, and I'm a big horror game fan, so it should surprise no one that I'm going to talk about Silent Hill. I feel that Silent Hill, you know, going back to the PS1, PS2 era, it really held this unique spot in the horror genre. It was very different from Resident Evil at the time, which obviously still continues to be huge. But it was more of psychological horror, more of tension and anxiety. And it's just a different type of game. And I think we've seen kind of this rebirth of horror lately. There's been a lot of good horror games, and most of them developed by smaller developers. You know, I'll call it games like Visage, right, which is downright frightening if you haven't played that and love horror games. But I think Silent Hill... just given the name, given what happened with PT and obviously the history there and kind of the hopeful return of Silent Hills that was sadly canceled, I think this is ripe for coming back. And I think there's a big fan base that wants it. You know, you can even tie back. I know it's been years now, but like the original movie even did very well. The second one, not so much, but the first one did very well. And I think this is one that is just prime for it. So in terms of developers, I was struggling a bit here. I know there's been the rumor out there, and Colin, you might have more insight into this than I do, but there's been the rumor out there that Bloober Team may get their hands on this. And, you know, whether or not anyone cares about Bloober Team, I'm a big fan of their work. I think they do a lot of good games or solid games in the psychological genre. Like I was saying, Blair Witch was a prime example. If you played through that game, there's a lot of good things there, despite some of the hiccups and things. They do a lot of good design work. So I could see Bloober Team doing it. And then, you know, you've got people like, you know, Shinji Mikami's over there at Tango, and who knows what they're doing right now. I mean, obviously they've got Ghostwire, and they said they're working on another game already, but who knows with that new funding and support what they could do. I mean, there's just a lot of kind of untapped potential, I think, especially from a Japanese horror side that could work on Silent Hill as well. So I'll stop there. That's kind of where I started at. But I really want to see Silent Hill come back. And when you're talking about the sad thing, when you're talking about a game, sorry, one more point on horror.
No, please, take your time.
Is that, you know, we were talking about kind of major developers that may have an impact on some of these IPs. And I feel that when we start talking about big developers, big names, horror is not so much that. A lot of the big horror games outside of Resident Evil is obviously kind of the most well-known, but a lot of these good horror games being built today are by smaller teams, smaller developers, indie developers. And so I don't know if there's necessarily some big name director, game director, or someone that's waiting to kind of have this opportunity with a horror game. But I think Silent Hill could be big enough to warrant it.
Yeah, well said. I feel like, well, first of all, you're absolutely right. The rise of these mid-tier and independent horror games has been a total boon to the industry, I think. And there's really no one outside of, like you said, some AAA's, Tango, obviously Capcom's in there, but there's, and EA's re-entering with Dead Space, but I think it's based on the trends of, like you said, with independent space, with Red Barrels and all these other studios finding success. And you're right with Bloober. I didn't play Blair Witch, but I did enjoy the first Layers of Fear game.
Yeah.
And I actually think the rise of the walking simulator has also been really awesome for, and I don't mean that in a pejorative way, really awesome for the horror genre, because as you said, it's not just about violence or combat. It can be about something more. I really liked Outlast because it was just with the camera. I thought that was a really neat mechanic. I like nonviolence in games a lot. So, or optional violence anyway, I think it's really quite nice.
Yeah, because it builds attention, right? Because you feel helpless.
Yeah.
Right? Like you feel like my only way to survive is to do this. You can't fight back, really, which is an interesting.
Exactly. And I feel like this is going to be the story with a lot of these IP, but Silent Hill's death has been kind of conspicuous because they, you know, I think it was Way Forward that did that random Vita game. And then they had that PS3 collection as well. And obviously, like you said, with PT and Silent Hills, I think Konami has to know. And I for the record, I think Bloober has, I could be wrong, but I think they've acknowledged that they're doing Silent Hill. So now the rumor is that there might be up to 3 Silent Hill games in development. So we don't, now it's just like too much.
Yeah, I think maybe just flood one it, right?
Right. Hopefully two of those are pachinko machines and the rumors are off.
Plot machines, yeah. Exactly.
All right. The first one I'm going to talk about is a really random one. And I feel like there's a possibility here. So I wanted to bring up the basketball game Double Dribble.
Wow.
And this is an old Konami IP that I had first been exposed to on the NES. I think a lot of people were exposed to there as well. I think it might have been on the MSX in Japan, but I've been thinking a lot about Konami in terms of this Pro Evolution Soccer eFootball situation. And we talked a lot about it a lot on the show, but I think it's a really clever thing they're doing. I think it's not very good apparently, but I think it's quite clever to compete with a behemoth like EA by saying, we're going to go free. You've been in the industry or been around gaming well long enough to remember what Sega tried to do to EA with NFL 2K5 by charging $20 for it when EA was charging $50, and that really worked for them. EA got scared and went and basically acquired the license as a result of that, so that no one can make games because they were scared of the economics of that. I feel like a similar thing can happen with basketball because it's not with EA, it would be for EA. And this is one of the things I wanted to talk about. Konami seems eager to collaborate with others. EA has been unable to get NBA Live off the ground again. And they have no basketball presence, really. Sometimes they release a game, sometimes they don't. Every year, as you know, I think 3 or 4 of them have been canceled. At IGN, as I've said, we got NBA Elite, I think 11 or something like that, which was canceled on a printed disc. So they canceled, they canceled that game so late that it actually went through manufacture. And I feel like they want to be in this space. Now, Visual Concepts, the NBA 2K team, is being split. They're huge and they're talented, but they're also now working, as people know, as the lead team on the WWE games as well, which aren't turning out. So the reason I say all this is because what if Konami collaborated with Electronic Arts to have a free-to-play basketball game licensed by the NBA, because that NBA license is open. EA has that license already, so Konami doesn't have to go through the legwork. And then there's a free-to-play eFootball-style game called Double Dribble that exists in perpetuity as a platform. And maybe it's free-to-play and microtransactions and all of that, updated rosters. I just saw that IP and I'm like, this is an interesting way. Obviously never going to happen, but an interesting way that Konami could leverage an old IP with a partner and get the name back out there. And so that was my first thought with Double Dribble. That was my first IP. Very obscure, but that's where my mind went.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you said Double Dribble, I was like, wow, I didn't expect to hear that one.
Yeah.
But I think it's a fair point. And I think the reference you made to NFL 2K, which many of us, 2K5 specifically, which many of us still cherish and love that game and still are angry about what EA did after that game, is that it showed that competition, in my opinion, in most things, right, is necessary. And I think NBA 2K, for as good as it is, from what I hear anyway, I don't actively play it, but it would be good to have competition in the space. The things we used to see when you had Live and you had NBA 2K, you had offshoots like NBA Street, right, which people loved. It's just not there anymore. And anytime that goes for a long running time where you don't have competition in the space, I start to worry. Madden's a perfect example, right? And we've seen that ever since. So whether or not this is, you know, would be something that would ever come to fruition, I still think it's a good idea from that perspective, that it would be good for competition's sake and just to give people an option. I completely agree with the Pro Evolution Soccer, is that from what I've seen, it hasn't been very good, but the idea is solid, right? The idea of moving a sports game to free to play and just allowing you to buy special jerseys or whatever it may be, right? In modern monetization. I think many players have been calling for that for a long time now.
Yeah, very much so. And yeah, NBA 2K is a very good game and is known as being a very good game. But like you said, competition breeds more excellence. It doesn't mean that there isn't already excellence in the space. So yeah, just an idea. Obviously, pie in the sky, never going to happen. But let me throw it back to you for your second choice.
Okay. Yeah, so I'll go a little smaller here. Although it's well known, is Contra. Going back to, obviously, the roots of the NES era again, and Contra's been around in some form and all over the place, right? They've had reboots, they've had portable games, they've had all these things. But what started making me think about Contra is not only the history of it and obviously the memories guys like us had of that game when we were younger, but the fact that, again, with the way the industry has moved, I would say, in the last few years, where we're seeing this just huge momentum for indie and AA developers, as you noted earlier, right, is I think there's a lot of opportunity for games like this to be reborn in a $20, $30 space, service games, whether it's like a PS Plus type edition or something like Game Pass, you know, just there's a lot of opportunities for developers now, more than there ever have been, at least in my opinion, for them to build these types of games and to build very good games that reach a much broader audience than they might have done years ago when you could only buy a physical package for $40 or whatever. So I think about Contra, and I think about one, you kind of have the name there. That name's very widely known, but you have the potential with all of these types of smaller games now to really build something that's very fine-tuned, even with a small team, right? Like Konami would not have to collaborate with a large team to get a game like Contra made. Look at the games we're praising this year so heavily, right? The smaller games like Death's Door, perfect example. That game was made by a handful of people, and it's on a lot of Game of the Year lists. You know, by it was Acid Nerve, I believe. But just an example there of where I think you could have an IP that's well-known, well-established. People kind of know what it is when you say Contra, right? But you could have a small development team of 8, 10, 12 people, a small studio, give them an opportunity, make sure the quality's there, and then just work with the major publishers to get that in the hands of millions and tens of millions of people. And I think, again, you've got a small investment from a IP side for Konami where, you know, again, you're getting your IP back out there and well-known.
Yeah, Contra is a great choice. It's my number two as well. I'll talk about it here, too, with you. Like you said, this IP has great potential. And it's very 80s, which I think is actually part of the reason why I think it's so appealing. Because I don't know where they should go with Contra. Part of me is like, why not make literally a AAA first person shooter called Contra? That's like where a part of my mind is, right? And then, or like a third person cover based shooter like Killswitch or, you know, Vanquish or something like that. But then I was thinking about the 2019 release Rogue Core, which was the last Contra game that came out. Now, I only played it very briefly and I bought it when it came out to support it, but Toylogic, I think, made it, and it wasn't very well received, but I actually think it might be on the right path, because what it is it's a top-down twin-stick shooter, basically. And when I was thinking about Rogue Core, and then I was thinking about who might make a Contra game and all of that, well, staying in the PlayStation ecosystem, the perfect marriage might be Housemarque. Now, I was thinking about, and again, I don't think this will happen, but do they want to leverage Contra into something that is huge? Because that's a different game. And I don't know how that would work anymore. I don't know if it could work. They released the Contra Anniversary Collection last year. And by the way, Konami's been doing better than anyone, maybe save Capcom, and getting their old games out again, which is very strange because they're so bad about getting their new stuff out. Like Castlevania Advance Collection is awesome. I've been playing Circle of the Moon. I'm almost done with that. And so, yeah, Housemarque, I think, would be the game, the studio rather, that might be able to do Contra right. I don't think any studio in the world makes better twin stick shooters, top down shooters than them. Now, they've gotten away from that a little bit, but per your point earlier about studios kind of getting in environments where they have a little bit more money, you brought up Tango with Bethesda and now with Microsoft. Could Housemarque split into more than one team? Because I know that they want to make more of a third person shooter now, that they're kind of styled like that. They've evolved. But I feel like their heritage is still with these old games. And I've said many times, I don't think anyone makes better arcade games or any stickier games than Housemarque, which is why it's such a shame that in some way that they're moving more towards Returnal, which is awesome. But yeah. Returnal's not as good as Super Stardust or Dead Nation or any of those kinds of games, in my opinion. So when I think about Contra, and it's got to come up in this conversation, I think about Housemarque. And also, per the 80s point, the 80s are always going to be cool, I think, to people. Not in that glitzy way, but like people like storytelling in the 80s because it's like a little less technological. There's no people have cell phones, but no one really has cell phones, no internet. It just is a little more romantic for a military story than having a fucking satellite phone and an M4 and all that kind of stuff. So another option there for storytelling. So very well said. Contra is an obvious choice. I'll throw it back to you now for what you want to bring up third.
Yeah, I just real quick comment on
that. Yeah, no, yeah, please. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Oh, no, you're fine. I was going to say Housemarque was a great call out because they built what? They're up to like around 100 people now, I believe, after Returnal.
Yeah, they're big, getting big now. Yeah.
Bigger. Yeah. So, I mean, God, could you not take 10% of that, put them on a Contra? I mean, you know, and make it in the vein, like you said, where a twin stick shooter, I'd be all for that. You're absolutely right. Nex Machina too, right? Just a brilliant, brilliant game from them. So, yeah, that's a great shout out for sure.
Thank you.
I'll move over to the RPG side because as I was kind of doing research here, I actually forgot about this and I don't know why I forgot about it, but I'm going to call out Suikoden.
Of course.
So Suikoden, again, you know, going back a little bit, but you're going early PS era, PS1 and 2 in particular. But Suikoden is, for those who may not be familiar, you know, was a top tier Japanese role-playing game of that era of what I consider probably my favorite era of JRPGs in the PS1, PS2. I mean, the PS1, just the quality of JRPGs on that platform is astounding. Still sad I sold all my collection, but that's neither here nor there.
I know. I hear you.
But Suikoden, you know, very beloved. You know, still to this day, Suikoden 2, you will see pop up on a lot of lists of greatest JRPGs of all time. And I think deservedly so. It's just, it had a slightly different take on the JRPG genre at the time, but sadly we haven't seen a mainline release of Suikoden. I believe it was 2006 or 7 was the last mainline release.
Yeah, Suikoden 5. Yeah.
Okay, right. Yeah, I think that was 6, right? 2006?
2006, yeah, on PS2.
But they did they've done some offshoots and stuff, but we haven't seen the, long story short, we haven't seen the IP in the main, you know, in front of us for a long time now. And I think when you look at modern JRPGs and how they're kind of starting to evolve, we look at something like a Dragon, which took Yakuza and made it into more of a full JRPG. Brilliant game. You look at Tales of Arise, very popular this year. You look at Persona 5, just spectacular game. And I'm not even personally the largest JRPG fan, but just thinking about what a modern Suikoden could be with today's technology, the class building. You know, we see all these genres kind of getting very popular now. Roguelites are huge, right? And these building, you know, whether it be town building, crafting, etc., all these things are huge. And Suikoden brought aspects of that to the JRP genre. It bought, you know, bringing hundreds of people or tens of people into your clan and figuring out who you want to use and building their skills and doing all this kind of like management aspects, but while still having the kind of classic tale that JRPGs tell, right? And that design and the music and everything that goes into a quality AAA JRPG experience. And so when I was kind of thinking about this, I was like, man, if you just look at the modern JRPGs and the potential there, I was really struggling. So I'm hoping you can help me out here, but I was really struggling with a team. I was trying to think of what kind of developer could bring this to light on a broader sense.
Yeah, maybe if, again, in the sky, a pie in the sky thing, that Konami needs partners, and I think they do.
Yeah.
You could say like Square Enix would be an interesting partner. Maybe Tokyo RPG Factory could be the team, the guys that did, you know, yeah. I Am Setsuna and all those. It's tough because it's about what we, well, what you would want Suikoden to be, because it, first of all, it's a great choice. And Suikoden 2, especially, like you said, is very beloved. And it's an interesting game because it wasn't very beloved back in the day, as you remember. Like, people liked it, but it was, I think Nintendo games suffer from this more, especially during the GameCube era, where people are like, I don't like Super Mario Sunshine. I don't like Wind Waker. And then 15 years later, everyone likes those games. It felt like a very similar thing with Suikoden. When we got in the West in 1999, I was a big, that's all I played during that era, were role-playing games. And it wasn't even that attractive. I bought it and I played it, but I wasn't even that attracted to it then. So I never pretended that I was like a big Suikoden guy. Now, I was very happy that I bought the PS2 versions of the game later on, because apparently those were also very rare. But I don't know. Like, it's funny because the role-playing games during the tail end, in my opinion, of the PS2 era, all the way through, I think, the PS3 era and Xbox 360 era, were really going through a crisis, because I think that Japanese developers particularly didn't know how to marry the sensibilities of role-playing games that we loved out of Japan with the new technologies, new engines, Unreal 2.5, or whatever they were trying to do. And they made the mistake that we cared about visuals more than we cared about storytelling, combat, mechanics, systems. And both of those things married together are great. But the reality is that era exposed a bunch of garbage studios that I would never want to touch something like this, that are still around. And no offense to them, but studios like CyberConnect or whatever, TriAce, it's like, these are teams that are budget compared to what you would want from Suikoden. And so maybe they build someone new to make it. I don't know. It'll be fun. But I think some of the great role-playing games right now are coming from small teams. Whether, you know, a game I played earlier this year, RFL, is from a small team. That was an awesome game. Obviously, people really like CrossCode. All these different games. And then Tales of Arise. Tales is awesome. I love Tales.
Yeah. Nexus too, from Bandai Namco.
Right. Another good game. I enjoyed it. Maybe a little too anime for me, though.
Yeah, it's fair. And that, I think that's where the Japanese role-playing game has that trouble sometimes. If they kind of dive too far into certain aspects, then you turn off certain people. And, you know, there can be a lost identity there sometimes.
Definitely.
I think Persona walks that line really well. Because I'm not a big anime guy, but Persona just is fantastic. You know, I think it gets around that. But yeah, I agree with you. I think we talked about a couple, like Contra in particular, not needing a big team. But I think to do Suikoden justice in today's Japanese role-playing game thing, I'd like to see this be a bigger effort, more of a AAA experience, in my opinion.
Yeah, they would have to do that. And I feel like it's not beyond the realm of possibility that these games get re-released. I know that they were available as PS1 classics, but again, Konami has shown a propensity to re-release their games. They at least get that. I think M2 is doing all the work for porting, and they're doing a nice job. And they're getting better and better, the collections too. So maybe we'll see a Suikoden collection. That would be pretty nice. All right. My third game is Gradius. And we had brought this up in the intro just in passing. And I'll say right off the bat that the team that I would want to do Gradius is my own. So now, a lot of teams can do Gradius, but we make a series called Hybroxia, Hybroxia 1, Hybroxia 2. These are games that are heavily inspired by Gradius. So I just wanted to throw out that we would be best prepared to do Gradius, but over at Lilymoam.
You there?
But Gradius is part of, I think with Contra and other games, certainly, but part of a really deep arcade lineage with Konami. And I think that needs to be brought to bear in some way. So I think getting in touch with your old school games is really important. And we're talking all about that. But I think staying old school with some of those games is going to be really important too. I think reimagining everything as something new and modern is cool. But what could be the game that stayed old? And I think there's another series that could stay old, and we'll talk about that undoubtedly. But Gradius is one of those games that I think could stay old. And I'm also wondering, because we tried to do this with Hybroxia, especially the sequel, but what does Gradius look like if it's really big, like really long, 30 stages, upgrade trees, optional paths and world maps and boss fights? And there's something very attractive about those Konami games to me. Obviously, Salamander is another one of those games, which we knew as Life Force, but I really love Gradius. And so I just wanted to throw that one out there. A little bit selfish, but that's just the way it's got to be. And so what do you think about that choice?
I like it. I had it right next to Contra on my list. Awesome. So I am a big, big shmup fan. Shoot 'em up for those who may not be as old. But the shmups were a huge part of my upbringing. And in fact, still love them to this day. In fact, not a couple weeks ago, I was playing R-Type Final 2, which again, R-Type, you know, long running shmup series. But to your point, stayed old. R-Type Final 2 is very reminiscent of those older games. The design is darn near, you know, the same, just new stages. So I'm on board with the idea. I really like that you threw out your last comment there around how big it can be, because I completely agree. When you're talking shmups, there's core things that, in my opinion, have to be there, right? And it depends on the shmup. Like R-Type has some specific things to it. So does Gradius. So do a bunch of other ones. But it's obviously very challenging, right? You're talking about design and really kind of working in your hand-eye coordination. But I think where they've struggled in the past is a lot of the ones that come out, like one of my favorites of all time, and this is going to be a deep dive here, but Blazing Star on Neo Geo. One of my favorites of all time. But that it's six levels, like anyone who plays the game, and you can beat that game pretty quickly, right? And I think I agree completely with you, which is you have to keep the design or kind of the methodology around the shmups at its core, right? But with today's technology, the way everything's implemented, having this kind of maybe branching tree, you know, roadmap, different levels, alternate ships, right, that have different abilities, all these types of things could add enough variety to really make it a game that has a lot of replay value, especially if they design it in today's industry where you could just add levels to it in the future, make it a platform, yep. Right? To where it's just, you know, you can add more and more, and maybe, you know, every couple months you pay $5 or $10 or whatever, and you get a few more levels, a few more challenges, what have you. I think I would love to see Gradius make that kind of return.
Yeah, me too. So that was on your list?
Yeah, got it right here.
So we're each down three then, and I suspect we have the same two final ones. So I will kick it over to you to talk about these two. I'd be surprised if they're not the same. So go on, take them however you want, whatever order you'd like.
Yeah, I think... from what I've gathered about you, I think I'm going to let you start with the one I think's more dear to you, I think. I don't know. So I'll go to Metal Gear Solid, or Metal Gear, I should say, not Solid necessarily. But Metal Gear is obviously, I would argue to say, or not even argue, but I would venture to say that it's probably the biggest IP we're talking about, right? Probably yes. The most well-known. Obviously, don't have to educate anyone on the history with Kojima and everything that happened there. It's obvious, too, that Metal Gear Survive is not what Metal Gear fans wanted. So now we're in a place of, okay, Kojima's off doing his own thing, own development studio, obviously bad relationship there with Konami. We have their last entry in Survive not doing well, yet you've got this gigantic IP that is rumored over here to be being, you know, Metal Gear Solid 3 is supposedly being remade. But how can they bring this IP back to the forefront with a new entry? And so... it's a very interesting conversation there. I think that without a doubt, this has to be a big game. We've talked on and off around whether it's a big game or you go small with it. I think this needs to be a big game. You really need to obviously partner with someone who has the talent to bring this quality way back up, because I don't know about you, but if this game releases, and I hate to use Metacritic scores, but if this game releases and it's just mediocre, it's still not good enough, right? The expectations for Metal Gear are sky high.
Definitely.
Especially when a mainline entry releases, right? So, and no matter what, it's going to be judged against the greatness that Kojima brought to the franchise for years, right? And very, very beloved. People hold those games extremely dear to them. So this is a real challenging one. If I'm Konami and I'm sitting there thinking, okay, this is our biggest IP, the one we have to get right. It's going to take a big partner and a lot of development staff to do this properly, which obviously is going to cost a lot of money. Who do we get to do this? So again, I have literally on my list potential devs with a question mark, because I was trying to think through who could bring this to light. And then you also have the question of, do you partner with a major publisher, be it PlayStation, Xbox, what have you, to come to a specific platform, which I think is a whole nother conversation, right? So I don't know. I struggle again with a developer here, but I think I'm very clear on what I'd like to see out of it. The biggest question I wanted to throw back to you on this one, as I was thinking about it, is do you want to see like a reboot where you get a Metal Gear or a Metal Gear Solid fresh and they kind of restart a story? Or do you want to see some type of continuation where Metal Gear 5 kind of left off and you just continue this timeline that exists?
Well, it's a great question because I was thinking the same thing. Because as you know, and I think a lot of the audience knows, Metal Gear Solid is not the first Metal Gear game. Metal Gear is the original series. Metal Gear 2 is the original sequel to Metal Gear and so on and so forth. And so I love that you brought that up because I feel like Kojima had wanted out multiple times. In fact, I think every Metal Gear game after the first one he said was going to be the last one. So 2 was going to be the last one, 3, 4, and 5. And I think it's time to do a new kind of Metal Gear. And that's why I wrote down in my notes, I just was like, it should just be called Metal Gear. Okay. And if they want to call it something else, it should be called Metal Gear something else. Metal Gear, whatever you want to call it, and start fresh. Now, I really feel like the only option for this is Kojima. And I think it can be done. I've said many times on my show that the only way Kojima and Konami are going to get back together in any way is through an intermediary. And the only intermediary that can get them together is Sony. And so I feel like even though Koji is probably working on the studio, working on a Microsoft game, I think they, you know, that's been widely reported. They certainly have investment and scale enough to, and they even have multiple teams. They have one in Europe, as we know. That seems to be in proximity to Guerrilla for Decima on purpose. Mm-hmm. So I really feel like that isn't beyond the realm of possibility. I really don't think so. And the Metal Gear Solid 3 remake is interesting, although I think Strange 2, it's pretty much been confirmed at this point because I think someone from Virtuous said that they're making it. So that's basically all the confirmation we need. But it's really important, as you said, to get this right, for this to be slickly AAA, for this to be $200 million a production and marketing. And in my mind, it's a PS5 exclusive published by Sony with Konami's blessing, made by Kojima. And I think that maybe all parties would rather do Silent Hill together. Mm. And I had this theory that PT would pop back up. Or if you had PT still on your PS4, that it would update one day with like a new, oof, you know, which I think would be really wild.
That'd be awesome.
I don't think that's going to happen because I think they removed it. And I always note that Sony never removes anything from the PSN. Like the Tomorrow Children Alpha is still on my download list, you know. So maybe it pops back up one day. I don't know. But I think that that has to be an obvious answer. And I agree with you. Like, well, part of me is like, wouldn't it be romantic to have like an old school top down Metal Gear game? But I'm like, that's a horrible idea, unless it's like a prequel or some sort of feeding into the main game. Very similar to what happened with Bloodstained. But yeah, it's got to be slickly AAA. And I really feel like it can only live with Kojima. I just don't feel like the audience is ever going to accept it if, no matter how good it is, if they don't get him involved in it. And so I think it's a total, like, it's going to be stillborn otherwise. Like, it's just not going to get off the ground without him. No one's going to want it. No one's going to buy it. No one's going to appreciate or accept it. And I wonder if this is going to be what's announced at the VGAs.
Mm, that'd be
in
huge.
December, because it's Kojima and Jeff Keighley and their weird bromance.
Yes.
It's the whole Moby Dick connection from VGA almost 10 years ago and Metal Gear Solid 5 and the Phantom Pain and all that. So that's the place where you set things up. And who knows? Maybe even we see Hassan Karaman. with his fucking weird ass game. All right.
Which is
do you have anything else to say about Metal Gear?
Yeah. So I think, I liked calling out that Metal Gear was a franchise before Solid, because I think there's a whole generation of gamers right now that look at Metal Gear Solid on the PS1 as kind of the start of that. And it's like, well, that's not really where it started. But yeah, it's an interesting take. I mean, that would obviously kind of be a megaton, right, in the industry if you have Kojima, Metal Gear, whatever the Metal Gear is, with Konami coming back for an exclusive game. So that'd be very interesting to see. I think I'd be interested to see if it does go that direction. What I was going to say is I'd be interested to see what type of involvement Kojima does have, right? Does he hand off kind of game direction to someone in his development company, and then he kind of just oversees as creative director and kind of adds that Kojima flair and weirdness that we all know to the game? You know, it would be really interesting to see if he's kind of partially hands off what type of Metal Gear game we would get.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's funny because I think all he would really need to do is write the treatment. And like, it reminds me a little bit of Fallout 76. And what I mean by that is, like, we all know that Bethesda Game Studios didn't make that game, but they pretended they made it. it's really the studio in Texas that made it, and they it kind of accept credit for it. Or like id and Avalanche with Rage 2. Id didn't make that game. I don't care what anyone says, they didn't make it. They can do a similar kind of wink and a nod thing here where it's like, yeah, Kojima's involved, and well, maybe similar to Elden Ring with George Martin, right? Where it's like, yeah, he did something.
Yes, you know? And so, it's just his name.
Yeah, yeah, right. But that would be all the necessary purchase, I think, would be necessary from people to buy in would be, okay, like he's around. You know, it's very similar to when Homefront came out and John Milius, you know, wrote it, even though he didn't. That was big for people that were into Apocalypse Now and Red Dawn and stuff. And so I don't know, we'll see what happens there, but that's an obvious one. And I'm sure Konami knows that it must be done right or not at all. And that's why I think they know. They know.
And Decima is a great shout out too. I mean, what we've seen out of that engine with Death Stranding, obviously Horizon, and upcoming Forbidden West is incredible. So I mean, the foundation is there, right?
Definitely. And yeah, Death Stranding is the only other game really built on it other than Shadowfall. So who knows why they were in the Netherlands specifically. I think that's not a coincidence, but we will see. The final product, as you had mentioned, is we both choose is Castlevania. Now, my audience knows I'm obsessed with Castlevania. I absolutely.
That's why I left it. Yeah, yeah, I figured that was yours. Yeah,
I adore. Thank you. I adore Castlevania. And I don't know what should be done with it. I don't know that Castlevania shone best when it was AAA. I think the 3D games are, some of them are underrated. I think like Castlevania 64 is not a bad game. I don't think Legacy of Darkness is a bad game. I don't even think, actually, I think that Lords of Shadow from Mercury Steam, the first one, is very good. I actually think it understood what Castlevania was. I don't know what the fuck they were thinking with that sequel. Horrible, horrible game. But you need to find the right tenor, the right studio, the right delivery. And I feel like we all kind of know Castlevania is best when it's 2D. And that's okay, because you can have a high quality 2D game. Think about Ori as an example, right? Very slick, very expensive game. And so I would want to see 2D. And I was thinking, would it be sprite based? I mean, it would be awesome to see a studio like Yacht Club or Way Forward or something give it all the love it deserves in the 2D space. But the studio that came to mind for me is IniCreates. And the reason that they come up to me is because they are the masters of this shit. And anyone who's played those Bloodstained prequel games, Circle or Curse of the Moon, I think it's called.
Yes.
They're always just on the edge of copying Castlevania. But those games are immaculate.
They are
absolutely nuts how good those games are. Castlevania 3 clones, basically. And so maybe there could be a little suite of games where you get an old school linear Castlevania, but you also get a 1997 style Metroidvania Symphony of the Night game, which is, of course, I mean, Symphony of the Night is inarguably one of the great games of all time in my mind, like a 10 all the way through. And so there's that kind of branch as well. And then maybe marrying them together, because, you know, Ains, what's been really popular and have been an interesting entry for people to Castlevania, younger people, is that anime.
Yeah, on Netflix. Have that right here too. Yep.
And it's great. And it's really great. I'm really impressed with it. Like, I don't think it had to be great. I don't think it was meant to be great necessarily. I just think they found the right people that appreciated the subject matter, especially the trilogy, the Castlevania 1, 2, and 3 trilogy, leading with Alucard and Simon and all that, Sypha, all the original characters, and that art style, that beautiful art style. So what if it was a 2D style Metroidvania, but hand-drawn? Why can't it be that way? Almost something like we wanted Bloodstained to be, Ritual of the Night. It's really a great game, but it's 2.5D, so it always comes off as budget. There's nothing you're going to be able to do to 2.5D in my mind that's going to make it come off as pretty as sprite based graphics and parallax scrolling and all the cool tricks you can do with sprite work. So maybe marry those two things together, and the end result is something that is undeniably playable, undeniably beautiful, and in a genre that I'm so pleased, although it's getting run into the ground, the Metroidvania genre, still very fun. I'll gladly jump into a Metroidvania once a quarter, no problem, no questions asked, for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where my mind is with Castlevania. What do you think about what should be done with the franchise? What do you think would help it live again?
A lot of good points there, and I agree with all of it, really. I think I agree it should be 2D. And I think that games, you called out Ori, which is fantastic. Like Will of the Wisps is literally a masterpiece. You think of how popular a game like Hollow Knight is, right? You called them out. And I know Shovel Knight's got a huge audience as well. And these kind of 2D Metroidvanias, as you said, you know, it's kind of all, that word is all over the place now. But you think of that, how popular they are now. And if you think of the potential for Castlevania as a very beloved IP, again, you called out the Netflix anime, which is quite popular right now. And you think about the potential there if you did something like that, a very fluid, hand-drawn, beautiful 2D game, again, in the vein of Ori, because it is gorgeous, right? You do something like that, but have all of the kind of greatness that's tied into the foundation of something like Symphony of the Night, which I have to imagine is widely considered the best Castlevania game, right? I mean, it's just one.
Yeah, I don't think anyone really questions that.
Yeah, so kind of build upon that design foundation, as we've talked about with some of these games, but make it exactly like you're saying, you know, 2D, fantastic art style, a lot of colors, a lot of use of animations, you know, fluid, very fluid. And give it that, the longevity. We've talked a couple times about these indie games. Like, they don't, when we say indie games or we say smaller devs or kind of even 2D, sometimes people assume the games have to be short, but they don't.
Right.
You know, you can make this with RPG mechanics and long, you know, just brilliant castles or whatever the setting may be for the game. All kinds of meaningful characters. And I think it's really important, in my opinion, if you want to make this a memorable Castlevania story, the writing has to be on point. So I don't know who you get to write it, but you've really got to write kind of your main character, whoever that's chosen to be in this entry, along with whatever your main antagonist and these other characters. They have to be well-written, well-scripted. And I just would love to see that, because I think, again, I think this is one of those kind of genres and IPs where this time that we're in the industry, it's literally ripe for Konami to bring this back.
Yeah,
there's just a lot of love out there right now. And it's funny you mentioned Ori 2 because of Moon Studio. If I remember correctly, Moon Studio said they're not doing an Ori 3, right? They're doing something else. And the talent they've shown with Will of the Wisps in particular, even though the first game's brilliant too, but the second one I think took it to the next level. What would you think about someone like them getting someone else to write it, but getting Moon to develop it?
I think it'll be awesome. Again, I think Konami needs to find the right partners. And I think sometimes the best partners are going to be exclusive studios. And I'd rather see Castlevania be done right on one platform than done half-assed on multiple platforms. You know, it's just the way it goes. Ideally, none of these would be exclusive. I've said before, I'm really against, you know, exclusives for exclusive sake, but just trying to be practical about what Konami would need to make this work. And I think what they would need more than anything is risk mitigation, because as I understand their financials, they're kind of not, they're fine, but they're, you know, pachinko is really, which, you know, and gambling has really been hit the last year and a half. And so they're coming back, and they also have their, and they've been pretty open. They're working with European teams to kind of get some publishing out there. So maybe they have a touchstone with a company or a team there that we're not even thinking of, but it has to be done right. And I think actually that might be the case for everything we've said before, because if you're going to re-enter the market after dormancy and there's going to be expectations on everything you do, because you've made such a big deal of leaving, that now that you're coming back, it's like, well, you better show the goods, man. And
yeah. And think about the quality difference today versus 10 years ago, right?
Definitely.
With a lot of these genres. I mean, a lot of these newer studios have shown, like we've been talking about, is they can produce AAA experiences, even if the game's not AAA, but AAA experiences and Game of the Year contenders, Hades being another brilliant one from Supergiant, right? Like, those types of experience are what kind of the top tier games and players expect now. And if you bring back any of these, Castlevania in particular, and it's mediocre, there's going to be wrath.
Yeah, definitely. And I, by the way, I know that a lot of people want FromSoft to make Castlevania, and I've talked about that in the past, because Bloodborne is that beginning few hours of Bloodborne is a Castlevania game. I think it's amazing, like, how much it looks like Castlevania. I think it invoked that in everyone, but that's not what Castlevania needs. I don't want a Soulsborne Castlevania game. They're hard, but they're not, I don't want them to beat the shit out of me. So that would be attractive. And you would have a lot of great talent working on it, but I don't think that that's what's right for Castlevania, personally. And that would annoy me to no end if that was all that it was this, like, very difficult game. No, Castlevania's hard, but not that hard.
Agree. And From Software they're doing so well with what they're doing. Let them continue on their path. Miyazaki is killing it. Elden Ring looks brilliant. Just, leave them alone. We can find someone else for Castlevania.
Indeed. Well, Ames, that's all we have. Those are our games. So Metal Gear, Castlevania, Gradius, Contra, Double Dribble, Silent Hill, and Suikoden. Really nice list and nice ideas. Exciting. Maybe we'll hit on one or two of these. We'll find out. People can remind us later. But I appreciate you taking the time to be on Sacred Plus today. And, you're great. I would love to have you back in the future. And yeah, so just remind everyone, seasongaming.com, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, thank you so much, man. It's been a pleasure, fun conversation. That time flew by, which usually does when you're having fun chatting games. So really appreciate the invite, like I said, Colin. It's been a pleasure. And yeah, just seasongaming.com. I'm Ains. Ains is not a common name, so you can pretty much find me pretty easily. I spend a lot of time on Twitter just talking games, very kind of from a positivity standpoint. I don't get into debates or controversy or nonsense. So just cool, really looking to talk games, and that's all we do. So again, thank you, and really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you. And thank you all out there for your love, kindness, and support of all things Sacred Symbols and Last Stand. We'll see you next time, of course. Until then, goodbye. Sacred Symbols, a PlayStation podcast, is a product and trademark of Last Stand Media and Collins Last Stand, LLC, and is proudly recorded in the USA. The show is conceived by, is written by, and is directed by me, Colin Moriarty. My co-hosts are Chris Raygun Maldonado and Dustin Furman. The show is produced by executive producer Dustin Furman. It's edited by associate producer Ben Smith. All of Last Stand's theme music is by my best friend, Ramon Narvaez. As you know, all of Last Stand's shows, including Sacred Symbols, are fan-funded on Patreon at patreon.com/laststandmedia. The following names are at the producer level on Patreon, our highest tier, and we're grateful for your thoughtful and kind contributions to our independent endeavor. Thank you. Andrew Morgan, Steven Nieder, Ross Marenka, Miguel A. Brewer, Morgan Ashley, Azan, Michael Vecchio, Jerome Ferreira, SLDFMA, Jorge Palomino, Daniel D'Amour, Brad Cooley, Jeremy Key, Patrick Leslie, Tom Quinn, Sword of Serious Gaming, Unofficial Controller Podcast, Colin Farley, Zia Parix, Henry Groth, Joshua, Relentless Rex, Troy Miller, Meyer Katz, Jordan Mittman, J.A. Zhu, Tristan Palacios, Drew Mullen, Graham Plays, Christian R., Jad Rita, Kurt M. Gillenberg, Patrick Skipper, Sweaty Mitt, Chris Kelly, Dustin Graff, Peyton Stone, Roberto, Nick R., Josh Hallen Rui, Tyler Watkins, Troilus True, Dan Root, Talisman, Christopher, Randall Halsey, Bobby Nauman, Nuke Dukem, Jim Bob 56, William Holbert, Dr. Stump, Josh Godfrey, Kalike Souza, Vornak, Betty Ann Moriarty, Daniel Johnson, H Tron, Jordan Peterson's Fat Hog, Ethan Davies, Jay Getter, Manuel Ochoa, Bjorn Campbell, Jeff Mercado, Gregory Slavinsky, Galja of Fortuna, Boots, Tyler Brown, Megadeth, Poot, Gavin Newland, Saul Balcazar, Brian White, Raul Melendez, Eric Harden, Alex Bolton, Matt Martin, Kinnums, Joseph Baker, Rodney Coleman, Chris Moore, Caswell, Anti Kinnanen, Chris, Will Hernandez, Chris Galvin, Mason Cadillac, Ollie Fritz, Zach Allum, George Anthony Nunez, Kyle Hagel, Christopher, Colin Love, Daryl E. Naiman, Ryan R. Kittredge, Toby Ryland, Michael S., David Bostick, Stewie108, Patrick Montgomery, DB Cooper, Cody Bradbury, Tom Cargill, Richter86, Steve Hodge, Holfeldian, Ian Bravo, Barrett Boswell, Andrew Parker, Christopher DeVio, Chris Morton, Kevin Komaki, Johnny Waffles, Roto24, Jonathan Coach, Sean Mason, Josh Gravelick, Brian Chan, Organic Produce, Shane St. Pierre, Carlos Algarit, Richard Hebert III, Miranda Grubba, Josh Yeager, Martin Beck, Joey Andrzejczyk, Nathan R., Joe McPartlin, Gary Cavallo, Christopher Moore, Jacob Bell, Dennis Usel, Eric Finkenbeiner, Lou and Ray Loper, Jonathan Cortez, Dylan Burns, Jason Lusky, Malachi Wall, John Schultz, David Chestnut, Anton K, Brian W. Rath, Alan Trembley, Tyler Bellow, Ryan T. Mandel, Tony Zuniga, Sean Battershall, Robbie Hensley, Alex Cabrera, Lennon Brixey, James Kitzel III, Will Caldwell, Hugo's Desk, Peter Reynolds, Anthony Vasquez, Adam Kinniston, William O'Carroll, Jesper Jansen, Max Cannon, Phil Crowan, Throw 7, Adam Nix, Josh McKinney, Michael Gates, Alex Gates, Ryan Robertson, Sean Chandler, Petro Rose, Lockmore, Gio Corsi, Joey Gondhaliker, Gerald Pennington, Justin Wagaman, David Iacolucci, Paul Joyce, Chad Lewis, Enrique Perez, Joshua Smallwood, Shane Rayum, Spencer Brand, Don Lee, John Cordero, Keith A. Lewis, Marius Carson Peterson, Ryan Greenwood, Tyler Harris, Matthew Perdue, Patrick Harper, Mad Mock Media, Jonathan Rice, and Casual Misfits Gaming.